And as we explore chapters 9 and 10 a little bit more than we did 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I ask that you give this some life to it as we look at it. In Jesus' name, amen. I'm going to walk through chapter 9, verses 1 to 20 in Joshua. We looked at it last week. I'll just make a few comments because the first 5 minutes or so I want to just got to get us up to speed. A lot of this tonight really has to do with how we deal with people and how we live our lives in terms of commitment and stuff like that. So as we start chapter 9 here, we have talked about the altars and the altar principle 4 weeks ago. And I think that's foundational stuff for anybody. And you might want to get that CD off the wall. And then we're looking at chapter 9 and 10. And they are really together. one story, you might say, in chapters 9 and 10. And it's when Joshua and his crowd had to deal with somebody that was dealing in deception with them. And the commitment they made to him. So I'm just going to read it and comment as we go. When all the kings who were beyond the Jordan in the hill country and the lowland all along the coast of the great sea toward Lebanon, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, heard of this, they gathered together with one accord to fight Joshua and Israel. Now all these are little city-states that are located in the Israel area. But when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai, they on their part acted with cunning and went and made ready provisions and took worn-out sacks upon their asses and wineskins, worn-out and torn and mended, with worn-out patched sandals on their feet and worn-out clothes, and all their provisions were dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal and said to him, and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country, so now make a covenant with us." But the men of Israel said to the Hivites, "Perhaps you live among us, then how can we make a covenant with you?" And they said to Joshua, "We are your servants." And Joshua said to them, "Who are you and where do you come from?" I mean, they're questioning him, obviously. And they said to him, "From a very far country your servants have come because of the name of the Lord your God, for we have heard a report of him and all that he did in Egypt and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, Sihon the king of Heshbon and Og the king of Bashan, who dwelt in Ashtaroth. And our elders and all the inhabitants of our country said to us, 'Take provisions in your hand for the journey, and go to meet them and say to them, we are your servants. Come now, make a covenant with us. Here is our bread. It was still warm when we took it from our houses as our food for the journey on the day we set forth to come to you. But now, behold, it's just dry and moldy. And these wineskins were new when we filled them, and behold, they are burst. They're old and worn out now. And these garments and shoes of ours are worn out from the very long journey.'" And so they're making this deception, basically. "So the men partook of their provisions and did not ask direction from the Lord." Now you got to take note of that verse, because that verse is a very important one. They did not ask direction from the Lord. That's the Israelites didn't. "And Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and the leaders of the congregation swore to them." Now, that's the covenant that they make with them. It's basically, it's a contract. "We're not going to kill you if we come across your people." So they're not going to do that, okay? But they have been deceived by these people. "At the end of 3 days, after they had made a covenant with them, they heard that they were their neighbors and that they dwelt among them." Now, they're as close as Macon is to here. That's how close they are. "Now, their cities were Gibeon, Shephirah, Beeroth, and Kiriath-Jearim. But the people of Israel did not kill them because the leaders of the congregation had sworn to them by the Lord, the God of Israel. Then all the congregations murmured against the leaders. Well, what kind of leaders we got anyway? They get deceived by these people, and now we got some kind of commitment to them. Oh, my God, what are we going to do with these people? Verse 19, but all the leaders said to all the congregation, we have sworn to them by the Lord, the God of Israel, now we may not touch them. This we will do to them, and let them live, lest wrath be upon us because of the oath which he swore to them. And the leader said to them, let them live. So they became hewers of wood and drawers of water. And we went through a lot of that 3 weeks ago. Now, in verse chapter 10, verse 6, there's a group of little city-states that get together and are going to fight the Israelites. And that's in the first five verses or so of chapter 10. And then they decide they're going to go against Gibeon people because they're siding with Joshua. And so the Gibeonites came to him, and it says in verse 6, and the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp in Gilgal, saying, do not relax your hand from your servants. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us, for all the kings of the Amorites that dwell in the hill country are gathered against us. Now, the covenant was this, that they would not kill these people. But these people are pushing on them in terms of that contract, and they say, hey, come on, you got to defend us too, and come up and take care of us. And Joshua and the people of Israel go that extra mile, you might say, and they defend these people. So Joshua stands by his word, and he serves the covenant that he made with these people. He sacrifices his own convenience, you might say, in terms of how they were looking at their future and how they were going to do things. And out of this, he ends up with victories and miracles. And we talked a lot about this 3 weeks ago. What I want to do tonight is I want to walk through a couple of principles in terms of our own vows and covenants and promises that we make to other people, some of which we do get connived into, you might say, but just some of the stuff that we do. And I want to talk to you a little bit about some of my covenant vows in terms of what I do as pastor of you guys who are members of this church, and what that means. I talked some about this a little bit, but I have a covenant that I have in terms of us as a church. When I was ordained back in 1972, the covenant that goes with that has to do with serving God's people usually in local expressions such as churches. When I became pastor of this church or the church I had down in Kentucky, I make a covenant. My covenant it has to do with you folks, but it also has to do with my covenant before God. And I do take it seriously. I don't know about other ministers. I can't vouch for them. I don't know enough about it. But I make a covenant and a vow. When I became pastor of this church, anybody who is a member of this church, I am to serve in a pastoral relations or as shepherd of you people. And that entails a few things. People wonder, what do I get if I join the church? Well, here it is. you become my responsibility before God in terms of shepherding and also in terms of discipling. Now, the difference is shepherding has to do with care. Discipling has to do with bringing you along in terms of the faith. I tell people that what I'm trying to do with people is I'm trying to build intrinsic faith into people, because I know we live in a very transient society and people move around a lot. And so discipling has to do with building intrinsic faith in people, and that is, don't tell me what your church believes. Tell me what you believe. Because I know that when it comes to crisis in your life or direction in your life or just the daily details of your life, you better know what you believe. And so all what we do in terms of the, you might say, the direction that we have is we are a discipling church in terms of building that intrinsic faith in people. And that's what I'm always up to. I also have a responsibility as shepherd. As long as you are a member of this church, I have a responsibility to care about you. You're under my prayer covering, for what it's worth, and you can determine that yourself. But I pray for you. As people in the church, in terms of that kind of thing. And this is a covenant that I make with God. It's not a covenant I make with you. I'll just tell you about it. But that's a covenant that I make with God. And until He releases me from that covenant in terms of shepherding you and discipling you, then I have a responsibility to you. Now, you may have noticed that this is a volunteer army. So I can only lead the horse to water. I can't always make a drink. But that's part of it. But that covenant has to do with my relationship with God through ordination, which happened back in 1972. Now, I know this. I mean, I drop stitches now and then with people and in the context of church because I'm not perfect for one thing, and I don't know everything that's going on. So you drop stitches now and then with people for various reasons. Some of them are just silliness, and sometimes it's a good reason. But I have a promise that I have made with God. It's an oath, and it has to do with those who are members of this church. Now, we have a large ministry as a church, and I'm part of that large ministry that we have in terms of people coming through here all the time who are not members of the church. My ministry to them has to do with, oh, discipling some, but, you know, if they go off and I don't have to worry about it. They are not my responsibility before God. So, you know, if they haven't made a commitment in terms of who we are as a congregation, I don't have a commitment to them. I may have a relationship or involvement with them, but I don't have a covenant relationship with them. Now, this has to do with covenants and vows, and we make covenants and vows kind of regularly, actually. Anytime you sign a legal document, such as when you buy a house or something like that, or buy a car or something, there usually is a legal document. That is a covenant or a contract that you're making with somebody. Usually it's a bank or something. That is a contract, and you're supposed to make good on that. When people get married, there's a covenant relationship that is formed. Because one of the vows that it says, I do promise and covenant before God and these witnesses to be your husband or wife. I do promise and covenant. In other words, you've got to be good for your word in terms of that. What we're seeing in this scripture, and I'm kind of expanding on that tonight, is we see a leader and leaders who make a covenant relationship with some people who are being deceptive with him, with Joshua. And he follows through on this, and I want you to hear this. It is not because of who they are, but it is because of who Joshua is, that he follows through on that commitment to those people and actually goes the extra mile. Now, in terms of vows and covenants, if you look at Ecclesiastes, and Ecclesiastes is right after Proverbs, at least it is in my book, chapter 5. I want to I want to talk to you about your commitments to God, maybe to other people, and how we are supposed to handle this stuff. Chapter 5 of Ecclesiastes has the first 7 verses have to do with making vows or covenants. Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. To draw near to listen is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools. Now, everybody know what the sacrifice of fools is? Talking. Just talking. Oh, I'm little. That's the sacrifice of fools. So when you draw near, to listen is better than to flap your lips. Got it? For they do not know that they are doing evil. Now, when you get the word evil, sometimes that word has to do with doing bad things, really bad, evil things. Sometimes it has to do with meaninglessness. And so when you're talking about evil, it's just not good. And he goes on, be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven, and you upon earth, therefore let your words be few. In other words, when you go out get into the presence of God, don't go talking. Be quiet. It is better to listen than to just flap your jaw. That's the first thing. And remember to have a healthy respect for who you're dealing with. You know, if you go into your boss's office or something like that, you're going to hold your tongue if you're smart, because if you get into a presence of a king, somebody who can be lord over you, it is wise to hold your tongue. And that's what they're talking about here, is when you come into the presence of God, be careful. Listen is better than talking. Verse 3, for a dream comes with much business and a fool's voice with many words. And he goes back to the fool. You know, they're always talking. I had a gal come talk to me one time, come see me. She wanted some kind of counseling. And it had to do with family marital stuff. And she came in to me. And, you know, usually you have some kind of dialogue that goes on. She never shut up for 45 minutes. And if she'd have shut up for that, for a couple of minutes, I'd have told her what her problem was. He says, you talk too much and your husband doesn't like it. But I didn't get a chance to even say it. But, I mean, she just run on, and I'm going, oh, well, I wouldn't want to be married to this gal. She needed to be quiet because the problems she was having were really emanating out of her. And if she had changed her tune a little, she might be in a better place. A fool's voice with many words. Verse 4, when you vow a vow to God, do not delay paying it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. It is better that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. I didn't mean it. By the way, sometimes I'm that messenger. You know, let your mouth not lead you into sin, and do not say before the messenger. I am sometimes the representative of God in given situations. And if you're going to make a promise or a vow in my presence, and it's to God, I'm a witness. It's scary because it says here, and I believe this because you need to understand, the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of knowledge is a healthy respect for who you're dealing with. Now, people of this world who do not believe in God or have any kind of a understanding of that, they'll do what they want and they'll tell me that I'm nuts to think that. But I believe that you need to be careful what kinds of commitments you make in terms of God's presence and how you do it. I have some scary stories about people who have made commitments to God, and they've been very vocal about it, and I have been a witness to them, and it is not wise. Because God will hold your feet to the fire. I've had people who have said, well, I dedicate my business to God. And you know what? And I've seen them renege on that. And you know what I think? I have seen God kind of take them to task over it. When anyone stands in front of me and is getting married, they are not just getting married legally. There is a witness before God. I do not do civil weddings. And I happen to be the messenger at that point standing in front of them. And they make a witness before God. Vows and covenants. We make them all the time. But we need to be careful how we make them. He says it's better you should not vow, not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin. And do not say before the messenger that it was a mistake. I didn't mean to say it. Why should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? In Matthew chapter, and we talked a little bit about this last time, chapter 5, verses 33 to 38. Jesus talks about this kind of stuff. Again, you have heard it that it was said of, to men of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say you do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem. That has to do with your religion, by the way. When he says Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. And what Jesus is saying here is, he says, if you're going to live this life, be very wise when it comes to making commitments, because God will take you to task. And when you're dealing with people, if you're going to make a promise, make sure you follow through on it. I love it when a plumber tells you you're going to do this and then he doesn't do it. I mean, what does that do? Or somebody makes a sense, yeah, I'll be there, and they don't show up. I've seen enough of these movies, you know, where either chick flicks or relational movies where, like a father who makes a commitment to a child, I'll be at the game, and doesn't show. Or he makes a guy or a gal makes a commitment or a vow to, I'll be there. I'll be there for you in terms of this or that. And they don't show. And what does that do to people in terms of how things work? You see, and I know this, and so it's always wise. If you say yes to something, be very, very reluctant to not finish it. Because it's happened. It's one of those things. Now, in terms of what I do as a pastor, now this is really what happened in this Joshua story right here, is he makes a commitment to a bunch of conniving guys who are trying to save their own skin, but they're still conniving and dealing in deception with them. I deal with people all the time. And I know this about people. People are no good. That's why Jesus died. That's the number one principle. And that includes you and me, by the way. And I've dealt with people over the years. And I have dealt with some people who have dealt in deception with me. I have dealt with people who have expected a great deal out of me. and have used me, just like these people were using Joshua and the Israelites. And I know this because in churches, you know, there are all kinds of people in churches. I wish that I could say that people in church are better than the people out there in the world. But the truth of the matter is, everybody's a sinner, and just because you believe in Jesus doesn't make you any less a sinner. It just makes you a possibility of being redeemed. But I'm here to tell you, we lie to ourselves, we deceive ourselves, we have self-interest, and we will ignore the fact that all these things are working in us, and I deal with people all the time. And some people are not truthful. Some people are self-deceived. Some people are deceiving, and they know what they're doing. And there's all kinds of things that go on in terms of churches. So my job, in that context, I have to drive in traffic, just like you have to drive in traffic in your job places and families and everything. You drive in traffic. And you're dealing with people, and these people come in all flavors, don't they? And I'm just assuming that all of us are good. For the evening, anyway. And some of those people that you are around will deal in deception and self-interest. They will try and use you, just like these people were trying to use Joshua. My responsibility is, in terms of the membership of a church, is to take care of the church and to take care of the people that are in the church. And I know that some of them are not always dealing in truth. And you have the same thing in your life. And if I make a covenant relationship, sometime it's one of those things where you make the covenant relationship and you say, oh, well, God, I wish I hadn't made that kind of commitment to these people. But he will not break his covenant with them. That's what Joshua shows them. Even though he has been had by them, he does not break it. Now, people in churches and outside are all the same, and sometimes you're dealing. Do you know that there are some really, really good people out there? And there are some really, really bad people out there? And then there's all the people in the middle, which are both good and bad, and that includes you and me and all that goes with it. And we need to keep that in mind all the time. Now, I, being pastor of a church, and my dad, boy, he was as smart as they come. He said, son, you're going to be dealing with the public. Now, he dealt with the public because he was a dentist. He said, you're going to be dealing with the public. And he says, I'm going to give you a piece of advice here. When you're dealing with the public, it's easy to become a cynic. He said, you have to guard your heart because some people are just not very good. Now, this didn't happen here. Of course, it doesn't happen here. But when I was down in Western Kentucky, now, I was at that church for 23 years. I guarantee you that some of those people were nasty over the years. They're just a good flow of them come through the place, and they'll go after you, and they'll eat on you, and they'll try and tear you apart, and they do it. I swear some of them do it very intentionally. And over a period of years, probably about 10 or so years, you got to be careful with your heart with people, because you can develop a very, very bad attitude about some in the context of the church. And you have to guard your heart. And one of the things that I figured out is that I reached a point where God pointed it out to me, my attitude was wrong with some of these people because they had hurt me. And I knew that I needed to be fixed because I was having a hard time being their pastor. This has to do with my covenant relationship with God because they were not, well, my judgment on that, they were not good people. They were not the salt of the earth. And I had to deal with it. I said, God, you better fix me because I cannot deal with these people. And I, some of them. And it's, you know, and so it was making my ministry rot on edges because of them. And it took God to fix me. Now, how he fixed me, I have no idea how that worked. I just know that I didn't do it. He did it. The other thing that I found out after I'd been in ministry for 15 years, and this is dealing with people, it's tough not to be a cynic when you're dealing with the public. Well, after about 15 years down there, of course, this never happened here. I was having a real hard time with some of those people, not because they were being ugly to me or anything like that. You know what they were doing? They were not living up to my expectations. You know, you there, and I have no ministers that day. You should be the way I want you to be. Anybody got anybody like that in your life? You should, got a son or a daughter? Or maybe it's your spouse. You should be the way I want you to be. Rather than the way you are. And I was continually having to deal with this in the context of a church. And I said, God, Mike, you need to be the way I want you to be. But Mike wasn't going to do that. And so I had to come to a realization that my expectations of people were my judgment on them. My brother's the one that pointed this out to me. He told me, who told you to keep score? And at which point I realized, I'm not the one to keep score. I'm not the judge. And so in the context of ministry, I am not responsible for their actions or their words or the way they live their lives. I am only responsible for my actions and my words and the way that I live my life. And a bad attitude usually develops when I expect someone or some situation to be the way I want them to be, or the way I want it to be. I expect it. And then I get all frustrated because it doesn't, they don't live up to my expectations. Now, the reason I'm saying this is because in this case, we're dealing with people who have dealt with deception, and Joshua stays true to them, and out of that comes a victory for the Israelites, but he has to deal with people who are being deceptive to him. He could have developed a bad attitude towards them. Said, you lied to me, I'm going to break this covenant. But he didn't do that. He stuck with it. He said, I'm going to fulfill what I said. I am not responsible for your actions, but I am responsible for my actions. I have come to realize you cannot demand people to love. You can't demand people to be nice. And you don't have any authority over them or to them unless they choose to give it to you. You see, one of the things that I've learned about people, and especially the church, because this is a volunteer army, the governing of a church is based upon submission to authority. And submission is not subjugation. That's what you have. That's what the government does to us. We are subjugated because if you go against the rules, they're going to either kill you or lock you up. But submission has to do with voluntary choice. I submit to the leadership of the elders or the deacons or whoever. I submit in this particular thing to the authority that this person has in this given situation. I submit to it. That is a choice. That's volunteer action. And you have to choose to do that. And that's why I know you can't demand people to love. You can't demand people to be nice. You can't even have any authority unless they choose to give it to you. And you have to have a change in heart or you can't live it. You'll have expectations. And expectations are judgments. And judgments, well, who told you to keep score? Okay? Number one principle here is if you make a promise or an oath, you stand by it. And so you need to be conscious of what you make promises to do. The second thing about people and churches is volunteer, once again, and there's all kinds of people within the context of here, just like out there in society. Only God's love and serving them in their weakness will you really begin to understand people. You have to be willing to serve them in their weaknesses. And when you do that, you begin to understand people. Once again, this story, I'm extrapolating out of this, but Joshua and the leaders of Israel decided to be true to their covenant promise that they made to those people, not because of what they were like, but because of what they were in terms of their relationship with God. And they said that. It says, we made a promise. We're going to stick with it. When you become a servant of other people, you really need... This is one of these words that just kind of sticks out at times. You need to understand people. In order to understand what's going on sometimes, you need... In a situation, you need to understand, that is, come to some kind of understanding of what's going on. When you want to know about a person or a person's situation or circumstance, you need to understand them. Now, to do that, what do you have to do? Well, if you turn the word around, you get it. You have to stand under them. That is, you have to put yourself in their place. You know, one of the things that I am aware of, I pretty much do it by just, is children. Do you know that when they come up here for the kids' message, especially, and I have some grandkids now, and they are about 2 feet tall, you have to get down on their level. If you don't get down on their level, you can't really see what's going on in terms of who they are. And you really don't recognize who they are as people till you get down on their level. In other words, to understand, you have to stand under their situation, circumstance, who they are as people. One of the things that I've always been trying to do, and I'm better at it sometimes than others, but I try to get a good handle on the life circumstance and situation of people as quickly as I can because it helps me in terms of being effective in ministry. And if you stand under them, that is, you get down to where they are in terms of how they are living their life. If you stand under their weakness, then you begin to understand them and see those things that have shaped their lives in order to give Well, to be effective either in compassion or in advice or direction, you have to get down to where they are. It is significant that Jesus stands under us. He understands us. God had to come in human flesh to get down on our level. You know, God in the glory cloud, which the Israelites saw, God in that kind of setting is not very friendly in terms of who they are. It's hard to have a really good relationship with a big cloud of fire. But if God decides to become like us and stand under our weakness, which is our human flesh, he can come to us and be effective in his relationship with us. And that's one of the things that I understand about when we do ministry with people. If we really want to know about something, you have to reduce yourself to that level that they are in if you are above them. And the only time that you will do that, this is what's really important, the only time you'll do that is if you love them. Because if I don't care about you, I don't care about your situation, I don't care about your life, I don't care about you, and I am not going to give enough time to even try and understand what's going on with you. Because I don't care, because I don't love. And it's only through love that we begin to figure out other people, because we begin to understand what makes them tick, and that means we try to become like them or low enough so we can see what's going on. In other words, in order to do that, you have to become like Jesus did, which he became like us. The best example that we have going right now really is every time we go into prison. I mean, the people in prison are people like us, but the only way for us to be a minister to them, really, is to go in there and be with them. In other words, to stand under their life situation so that we can be somewhat effective in terms of bringing the love of God to them. And I'm here to tell you, you're not going to do that unless God tells you to do that and you love God enough to go in there, or you love people enough to go in there. You just don't do it. Why bother? I don't care. Which means I don't love. That's how we do this. Now, when it comes to caring is love, I want you to think about your life, because we got a lot of different life situations going on here, as many people as there are. We've got all kinds of stuff, okay? If you think about your life, maybe a difficult situation or a difficult circumstance or whatever, questions that you might ponder is why? Why did you get into that particular situation? Or how did you get into that particular situation? We look at the story of Joshua. The reason they got into it is, I'll just read it to you again, because this is the power verse. Chapter 9, verse 14. So the men partook of their provisions and did not ask direction from the Lord. How many times have you gotten into some kind of situation or circumstance and more than likely you did not ask for direction from the Lord? They didn't. What mistake did you make? Have you ever made a commitment and you can't back out, but you wish you hadn't made it? you felt duped or cheated or something like that? You see, Joshua was involved in a commitment that he could back out of. He could. Because when they asked them, so you need to protect us, he could have said, no. I don't have to do that for you. All I have to do is not kill you. That was the original agreement. He could have backed out of that right then. But his integrity with God stopped him. And so he backed those people up. A couple of words. Sometimes there are words that we don't really like because they demand something from us. Obligation and commitment. I mean, these two words right here are just loaded with luggage. You have an obligation. Or you have made a commitment. You see how this works? The thing that's interesting about this is, do you have an obligation to God or a commitment to God that drives you or not? I mean, because a lot of the things that we get ourselves involved in, if you don't have some kind of inner structure in terms of what that means to you as a vow or a promise or a commitment or an oath or something, then you don't have anything to hold you together in terms of that. But an obligation and a commitment, these are just loaded with luggage. We have an institution, the church is really an institution that is a volunteer army. I don't think some people really understand that truth. But a lot of people figure it out. They get their nose out of joint because somebody in the leadership does something or somebody in the congregation does something. And buddy, I'm out of here. That's what they do. You see, people don't follow through on why am I here? People back out of obligation. They back out of commitments. And a lot of times the reason that they're in the situation they're in the first place is because of chapter 9, verse 14. They didn't ask direction from the Lord. They didn't pray. Sometimes people, you know, they'll blame all the officers or the elders of the church because they don't like what's going on. And that's what those people did here. They did that. Now, in a volunteer army, you can just walk away. You know, if I tell you the truth, I have to mix some sugar with it because you won't want it just straight up. That's just part of how it works. And so sometimes that happens in church. And now, as I said, I've been in church work for a long time, so I've watched this stuff over the years. They'll blame somebody else, or they'll blame themselves, or they'll blame God. But what they do is they revoke their involvement in the church. They'll blame the preacher, they blame the elders, and if it doesn't feel good or if it's not convenient, they'll revoke the covenant that they make. Now, in the midst of all this, I mean, we're grown people. God's authority in your life either makes a difference or it doesn't. God's authority in your life either means something or it doesn't. If it means something, then there are things that we're involved in that we do it because of our relationship with God. And I know this, some things get really frustrating, don't they? I mean, I've been there. Why doesn't something change? I quit. I'm out of here. Can you imagine Joshua, the people from Gibeon, they call him up. hey, you got to come help us. We got these people coming after us. And you said you would. You said you would. And Joshua's going, he's talking to him on the phone. And he slams the phone down on him and says, you take care of yourself. See, they call him up and they're reminding him of this treaty that they made. But it's more than the treaty. We want you to defend us. We want you to help us. So Joshua goes and he helps these people. There are situations that we all get into, and I expect with this number of people, somebody right now, there are situations that we all get into where either stupidity has entered into it, or we've been very short-sighted, or you may have got deceived or tricked. You may have even been exploited. How are you going to respond in that given situation? Are you going to blame them? Or are you going to blame yourself? It's my fault. God, I'm just stupid enough to get involved in this thing. Short-sighted. You're going to blame God for it. Why do you do this to me? Or are you going to respond based upon your word, your commitment, whatever it was that you got you into this? You see, a lot of things in our life really has to do with our word. Are you good for your word? In fact, if you read the story like of Abraham, Abraham was all upset because he did not see any future to his life. God had told him that he was going to have a son, but Sarah was beyond childbearing and he was an old man, and he says, I don't see it happening, God. I just don't see it happening. But God had promised. And God appeared to him one night and said, listen, Abraham, you're looking at this all wrong. I want you to come outside. I told you that you're going to have a son and people are going to call you father. And I want you to look up in the sky and see all those stars up there. He said, you see all those stars? That's how many descendants you're going to have. And it says in there that Abraham believed God at that point. Now, what did God give him at that point? Because it was a number of years later before Isaac showed up. He gave him his word. That's all he gave him at that point in time. Are you good for your word? That's a real important question to make sure that will guide you also and say, well, do I make a promise here or not? Do I make some kind of a commitment here or not? Are you going to be good for your word? And it has nothing to do with those other people. I made a commitment to God in terms of my relationship in ordination 40 years ago. That involves you folks now. But my relationship with God has to do with what is my responsibility in terms of leading this church. And this church is made up of people like you and me. And I have a commitment to that. And that is a guiding force behind me all the time. And if you think about what that commitment means, I'm driving in traffic all the time because there are all kinds of interest groups in this church. You know, there are interest groups that have to do with each Sunday school class. There are interest groups that have to do with the worship team. There are interest groups that have to do with certain groups within the context of the church. They're interest groups, and they have the interests in certain areas. And you have to manage that. So my commitment, my covenant with God in terms of being pastor of this church has to do with the needs of the many sometimes outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And sometimes the needs of the one out weigh the needs of the many in terms of who we are as a church. And so you're driving in traffic. I know this, every one of us, depending on how much involvement we have with other people in our environments, we're all driving in traffic when it comes to commitments and covenants and vows and oaths and promises that we make. If you're going to be involved in doing that, even if you get deceived because of it, what are you going to be good for, your word or not? Now, if you read this story, what happens is that Joshua gets benefited. I mean, they have victories here. We talked about this 3 weeks ago. This is where the sun stood still. And then we see that miracle that takes place. And it's all because Joshua is good for his word. And those people of Gibeon, there wasn't a lot that they could do for Joshua. I mean, they weren't going to be any big help to him, but his commitment was to them. And he made it and he kept it. And it was for their sake. But out of that, he received a tremendous victory. He saw the miracles take place in terms of that. Very good. I'm going to stop here. Now, I want to tell you about this stuff. Chapters 10 to 12, which is coming up, are really about a lot of smiting. They're smiting everybody in terms of those things. So we're not going to look real close at them. And we're going to pick up in chapter 13. And I'm just going to give you One of the greatest scriptures that I've ever come across. Chapter 13, verse 1. Now Joshua was old and advanced in years. And the Lord said to him, "You are old and advanced in years." Can you see Joshua looking in the mirror in the morning? "God, I'm old." And this little voice comes out of it. "Yes, you are." That's it. That's what it says. We're going to look at that verse, but then we're going to look at some other things in chapter 13 and down in chapter 23. One of the things that happens here, if you look at this thing, you have a lot of inheritance going on here and the lands that are given to the different tribes and stuff, and we're not going to go into that, but we will talk about inheritance in terms of what we give and what we receive in terms of, well, when somebody passes, or what we give when we do with our lives, okay? And that'll be next week, so we'll look at that favorite verse too. Lord, I ask that anything I said tonight that's worthy, that it kind of works into us in terms of our own vows, commitments, and oaths, and things that we promise to people, and help us to remember also that sometimes it's the little promises that have big results, either positively or negatively, depending on whether we keep them or not. And I ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.